This is the Leadership Momentum Podcast with Chris Brown and Ken Coleman.
Alongside Chris Brown, I am Ken Coleman, and we are thrilled that you're hanging out with us. It's always fun when you launch a new podcast, isn't it, Chris?
It is.
And this is an intentional conversation with you leaders of the church, and we are really thrilled that you are engaging in the numbers that you are. Our feature conversation today. Chris, you're always picking some good ones. I get to just show up, and you're always thinking about this. Robert Morris, pastor of Gateway in the Dallas, Texas area, a good friend of Dave Ramsey's, a good friend of our organization, of course, is you as well, and this is who we're going to talk to today. So let me get right to this. Why? Why'd you pick Robert, and why the conversation focus that we chose?
Yeah, a lot of times it's not just picking the person to be on the podcast, it's the topic. Mm. And what we're going to talk about today is one of the biggest tensions in the church, and that is developing a culture of generosity. There's so many different perspectives out there. There's the perspective of don't touch it. I'm scared of it. I don't want to go near it. And then there's the perspective of possibly there's a perception of speaking about it too much. And so I just think Robert Morris finds that perfect balance, and he just has a lot of wisdom when it comes to this.
I got to ask you, why? Let's go back. I think you've nailed that, and I don't think any pastor would disagree with that analysis from you, but why do you think that exists? Why does that tension exist, or maybe where does it come from in your opinion?
Yeah, well, I just actually read an article today that talked about money is actually more taboo than talking about religion and talking about politics.
Wow.
There's so much tension around the topic because at the root, people's finances are not in a good spot. Mm-hmm. They don't want to talk about it. It's one of those things that don't ask me about this, and they feel vulnerable about it. And so then you talk about it from a platform, and you got hundreds or thousands, yes, or maybe it's just dozens, or they're sitting there in the congregations, and it is so awkward because you know they're not in a position to do any of the things that they want to do.
Now, Robert kind of touches on this. I'm not going to give too much away here in the conversation, but I want to follow up with you on that. Yes, it is a issue of tension because people's money isn't being handled well. So it's kind of like, hey, you're touching a bruise. You're sticking your finger in a wound here. But it's also a heart issue. Do you find that if our hearts are in the right place when it comes to money, that we are much more open to having a conversation about it? This is a big heart issue, not just a practical issue, correct?
Yeah, what we really want to open up today is the fact that when you talk about money, you're really not talking about money. You're talking about heart. You're talking about something way deeper than that. And so that's what Pastor Robert's going to open up for us today. And, you know, a lot of us, you know, we get on the platform, we're scared to talk about money because we know the perception out there. But in our heart, in our motives, if we're talking about something way deeper than that, it's not a problem.
What do you admire most about Robert? I know you make a living out of studying great men of God and what they're doing from a leadership and stewardship standpoint. Just be curious, something that sticks out to you. When you hear Robert Morris, what pops the top of Chris Brown's mind?
Every time you talk to him, he's got a fresh story of generosity. He's leading it from the top. He's modeling it. This isn't just a concept to him. This is real life for him. And he's modeling that not only for his congregation, but for all of us other leaders out there who are learning from him.
You know, it's true. He's so bold. He's so bold on this issue that, hey, we've got to stand up and preach on this, and why are we ashamed of it? But it doesn't come across in a negative way. That's what I love about his heart on stewardship and generosity and leading is so pure that he's just unabashedly unashamed, but he doesn't come across in a negative way. So we're really excited about this conversation. This was enjoyable. Chris and I got to get on the phone recently with Robert Morris. And so without any further ado, let's get right to it. Here is our conversation with Pastor Robert Morris.
Pastor, we are so glad that you are spending your time with us today. We're going to talk a lot about creating a culture of generosity, and you are one of the cultures around America that's highly looked to when it comes to this. What you guys are experiencing there at Gateway, you're seeing God do some amazing things. And so I know there's a lot of hows, there's a lot of whys, there's a lot of whats that are behind all that. And we just want to dig into that brain of yours, and all the leaders are going to be very thankful for it. Let's start at this whole idea of stewardship, because I know stewardship is the foundation to the culture you're experiencing. First of all, what does stewardship mean to you, and when did all that start in your personal life?
Well, it started really with my father, I had a great natural giving, stewarding father, but I always want to say to people, because many people did not have a father that was a giver and a good steward, but we all do now. We all have
that's right.
A great steward, father, now giver, because he stewards us, he stewards our lives, he stewards the earth, he stewards his time and his energy and his resources to be a good father. And then, of course, we know he's the greatest giver ever, for God so loved the world that he gave. And so we're even, the reason we're even talking on the phone today is because God gave his son and Jesus gave his life, and we gave our lives to Jesus Christ. And so to me, giving is just a foundation for everything that God taught us. But it really started watching my father be a good steward so that he could be a generous giver. And as I was growing up, I just remember him always helping people, even buying cars for people that I didn't think were going to pay him back, and ended up not paying him back. And I even remember one time asking him, he was showing me this little book, as fathers do as they get older, they start preparing their sons, and in case something happens to me, let me show you the finances. And he showed me this little book of personal loans that he had out to people. And I mean, the amount was extremely extravagant. I couldn't even believe it. And I said, "Well, Dad, what are you going to do if they don't pay you back?" And he got a tear in his eye and said, "Well, then I got to bless them, didn't I?" Mm. And that's really the way he looks at it. And so that was the start for me, is watching a man who really loved Jesus and who loved others, and he showed it and demonstrated it through being a good steward so he could be an extravagant giver.
Pastor, I love that story and the influence of your father. And so as you look back to the early days when you started Gateway, his influence on you, how did that affect how you began to set up a culture from the very beginning at Gateway?
Yeah, it really started when I accepted Christ in 1981. And I remember just wanting to everyone to have what I had. So I wanted to give them Jesus.
Yeah.
But I was really shy about talking to people. And so I started putting those tracts, you know, everywhere I could, those little booklets that would tell the gospel. And I remember putting them on the table and trying to put a bigger tip in there just so maybe they would read the tract. And this one lady, Debbie and I prayed about it. We put a really large tip in there because we'd been praying for this lady who'd been serving us at this restaurant. And when we went back, she said, "Hey, I read that booklet, and I accepted Christ. And I called my husband and read it to him on the phone, and he accepted Christ." And later, as we talked, I questioned her about that. "So, well, did you call him at home or at work?" And she put her head down, and she said, "No, he's in prison." But here's the great news. We saw just a few years later, he got out of prison. He did make a mistake, but he got out of prison, served his time, and we watched both of them get baptized. Mm. Simply from giving a tract, but also giving something monetarily to say, "Hey, we appreciate you, and we want to be able to give back to you for how you served us."
Yeah, you know, so often I've heard you speak about the whole idea of generosity without even using the word money. We're talking about a culture of generosity, and it's amazing to me how you intertwine generosity and you don't go directly to money. On the weekends from the platform, you speak about generosity every weekend, but you don't necessarily talk about tithing. You don't talk about above and beyond giving. You don't talk about even money, but you talk about this idea of generosity. How do you cultivate this culture of generosity from the platform without even talking about money necessarily?
Well, it's interesting the way you asked me, and I was asked in an interview several years ago, and that helped me to clarify that my understanding of what God had called me to do. Someone asked me, said, "How often do you preach on giving?" And I responded and said, "Every week." And I really responded before I even thought about it. And the guy said, "What? You preach on giving every week?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "But you didn't ask me how often I preach on giving money. And if you were to ask that, that's about every 3 years I'll do a stewardship and generosity series. But you asked how often I preach on giving." And I said, "You know, I can't preach on marriage and not preach on giving, because we have to give of ourselves to each other. I can't preach on witnessing and not preach on giving, because we give our time and we give our testimony and we give our words. And I can't preach on prayer without preaching on giving." And for me, you know, giving is a verb. And then we're the subjects. If we're the ones giving, God's the subject. He's the one giving. But money might be the object of what we're giving one time, but love could be the object of what we're giving. The time could be, you know, our energy. So it's about a heart of generosity that we understand freely we've received, so freely we give. And I really think once we understand how freely we have received, that Jesus, God gave the greatest gift he could ever give, and we freely received it, that causes us, then that lays the foundation for us to become extremely generous givers, because we receive freely, therefore we can give freely.
You just so beautifully laid it out that giving is much more than just our money. You specifically mentioned love, time, and energy. I'm curious, from a leadership standpoint at your church, how you and the church leaders have discipled your community to give in all those other areas. What are some initiatives that you have led to really make sure that this is happening, not just giving financially, but in their love, their time, their energy? What's that look like at your church?
Well, I like the word used, discipled, because the Bible talks about preaching and teaching. And preaching to me is kind of the motivation of why we do something, and teaching is the what and the how that we do. In other words, I do preaching and teaching in the pulpit, but I've only got about 30 to 35 minutes a week, like a lot of pastors do. So there's got to be a lot more teaching to come behind my preaching. In other words, if I'm preaching on giving your time, giving your energy, giving your finances, giving your talent to God, there's got to be behind me a lot of teaching of what that means and how we would do that. And just, for instance, in the area of finances, that's where our stewardship department comes in. I think we have 6 or 7 full-time staff in the area of stewardship. And they provide all sorts of classes. They provide, you know, the FPU resources, you know, from you guys, resources from others, resources to be able to have small groups, budgeting classes, coaching classes, mentoring classes. It's in some ways, in the area of finances, it's like we're riding in a carpool, you know, with 3 other people. There's a guy driving, and then he says, listen, I'm not going to be driving the carpool anymore, but I want you to drive now. And you say, well, wait, I don't have a driver's license. I've never even had any driver's education or any class. I've never driven a car before. That's okay. You'll get the hang of it. That's kind of the way we do with finances. We say to people, okay, it's your turn now. You're going to have a mortgage, or you're going to have some bills coming in, or you're going to be able to need to save some to be able to pay for meals and clothing. You got a family now, and part of it is the financial part. And the person said, well, wait a minute, I've never had anybody train me or teach me in this area. So a huge part of creating a culture of generosity is to have a stewardship department or people that can help and mentor others. And I would say this also to pastors of smaller churches, because Gateway was a small church at one time. And so many people forget that, when they see our size now. But we had lay people who weren't on staff, and they loved it. They wanted to be asked to mentor couples and to teach financial classes and to lead an FPU at our church. They wanted to do it. And so for years, it was several years before we actually ever hired a staff person. Now our staff pastors, actually, they do teach, but much of what they do is coordinate volunteers who actually help others in their finances. So a big part of creating a stewardship culture is not just the preaching part, but the teaching part and the discipling part that follows up the preaching from the pulpit.
Yeah, I noticed that, you know, it's not either or, it's both. It's the inspiration from the platform and then definitely addressing the how off of the platform. Pastor, I loved the fact that you talked about lay people and their involvement, because so often in the back of our mind, we're thinking we're asking people, you know, for something from them, when really it's something for them. It's getting them engaged in the Bride of Christ, and they love it. They're wanting to be asked. They're flattered that they're asked. And so oftentimes, even if it has anything to do with stewardship ministry or even something else, we're afraid to ask them. When it comes to your leadership there at Gateway, how has modeling looked? The whole God owns it all, that we're managers of our time, our talent, our resources, relationship, our marriage, our parenting, our health, you name it. Modeling is tricky for a lead pastor. Where's the line between modeling and you feel like you're kind of bragging, but you want to make sure that you inspire folks because you're doing it yourself? How do you balance all that?
Well, I'll t- tell you, the line between modeling and bragging is in your heart. Mm. And that does, it doesn't matter whether it's in the area of giving or in the area of witnessing or in the area of prayer. You know, when you're modeling or sharing how you do your own personal quiet time, or how you witness to people in the street, and that you led someone to Christ this last week. When you share that from the pulpit, whether you're modeling or bragging is a heart issue. Mm-hmm. And so I just try to keep my heart right with the Lord. And the Lord showed me a long time ago, you know, son, I'm the one actually giving. I mean, you know, I'm giving it through you, but I'm the one that's provided it. I'm giving it. It's coming from me. So you're really bragging. If you're bragging, you're bragging on me. You're not bragging on you. You're bragging on me. And so I've really just come to that place. And then also modeling is about not only sharing the victories, but sharing the struggles. You know, I'll share with people when we're going to give an offering towards something. And I just did this about a month ago. I said, you know, I was really struggling between two amounts, you know, and I so many times I feel like I hear or I sense a certain amount, but a lot of people don't do that. My wife doesn't. She's never really heard an amount, and she's not real good with math either, you know. I'll say to her sometimes, how much should we give? And she'll say, $500. And I'll say, okay, do you feel like $500? She'll say, well, or $5,000. I'll say, sugar, there's a lot of difference between those two numbers. But she doesn't think that way. So I shared with the people just a while back, hey, I don't always hear a certain amount. Mm-hmm. And I was struggling between two amounts too. And I know what that's like. But I just decided, you know what, I have the ability to give the larger amount, and I'm going to do that. But there have been times when I've given a smaller amount. So modeling is not just bragging on that I'm giving, but also modeling that, hey, I struggle in this area too, and I'm right there with you, and we're going to walk through this together.
Pastor, you talked a minute ago about the stewardship staff. And with all things being relative, obviously not every church can maybe make a full-time hire in this position, but you have. We've had the privilege to get to know Gunner, who leads that area. Why is it important, and how significant has it been to have a full-time stewardship pastor and a staff that leads this initiative?
Yeah, well, it's extremely important because of the reason of gifting and anointing. You know, you wouldn't want a guy sharing the word every week who wasn't gifted and anointed to do it. In the same way, you wouldn't want a guy doing your taxes, you know, who wasn't gifted and anointed to do it. And my accountant is a whole lot better at doing my taxes than I am, but I'm a whole lot better at preaching than he is. And that's because God gives us all gifts and talents. We wouldn't want a guy that couldn't sing to lead worship. So we have worship pastors, we have children's pastors, people who are gifted and talented to, like in their children, to break the word down where they can understand it on their level, make it fun, and they go home excited about what they learn. In the same way, Gunner specifically, as you mentioned, and the other stewardship pastors we have, they are pastors who are gifted, who've trained, who've learned, who've been taught, and they're gifted and they're anointed by God to teach people in this area. And so it's very important, and as I was saying, if you can find a layperson, if you can't have a staff hire, that I understand that, because we had a part-time children's pastor for a while. We had a part-time youth pastor for a while. So I would start, though, with someone who's gifted and called by God. That's the main thing, is get someone who's gifted and called by God to help people in this area. And then as the church grows and you can add staff to your, you know, people to your staff, I would look as soon as I could at getting a stewardship pastor. And here's one of the major reasons I want to say that, and I haven't been able to say this yet, but Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. I've heard pastors misquote that scripture, and I'm not throwing anyone under the bus. I've actually misquoted it. I've said before, you know, the Bible says, where your heart is, there your treasure will be. But that's not what Jesus said. He said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be. Mm. Your heart follows your treasure. So actually, we want people's hearts in the kingdom. And the way we get people's hearts in the kingdom is we actually help them manage their treasure so they can put their treasure in the kingdom, and then their heart follows their treasure. So it really is important, even though giving applies to many other areas of our lives, Jesus is the one that brought it back to a heart issue.
That's a powerful word, Pastor Robert. But right now in the church world, where there is a push or a focus on hyper-simplifying the church, less programs, do ministry simple, I'm obviously a big proponent of stewardship ministry. Now, starting a stewardship ministry is a little overwhelming for a lot of pastors.
It's very, very, very important to teach people in the area of finances. There are marriages that have ended because of poor stewardship and a lack of generosity. There are kids that have didn't grow up in a stable home, but an arguing home and a stress-filled home because of this lack of teaching in this area. So it's an extremely important and crucial area. So I would say start with someone, staff or not, who's gifted and talented, and then as soon as the church grows to the size where it can employ a stewardship pastor, I would get a guy on staff as quickly as I could and see him just as important as the worship pastor, children's pastor, missions pastor, associate pastor, hospital pastor, because this is a place where people really do need ministry.
You know, it's interesting to hear you talk about your stewardship pastor and the importance of that role in the church. And I think it's important to point something out that you probably would not say, so I'll say it. The reality is that in your church, the giving percentage of your congregants is significantly higher than the rest of the church world. That's no accident.
Well, we do have a lot of givers. Our percentage of givers is very, very high at Gateway. I'm very, very grateful for that. I think one of the reasons that we have so many people that give is because I know when I stand in the pulpit that I'm preaching it for their good. Mm. In other words, I know I'm not doing it as a fundraiser. I'm not trying to get the tithe to go up so we can raise our church budget. That it's nowhere in my heart. And what I say to pastors, because they'll say, well, I fear that a little bit of it is in my heart. Well, there's a couple of things. Well, one is if the church budget does go up, that's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing that you're going to be able to help more people. So that's okay. But secondly, just if you really take it and pray through this thing and get a burden from the Lord, like when I preach on marriage, I know that the church is going to be better off because people are going to learn principles that are going to build solid, stable families. But I'm really doing it for the people.
Yeah.
I know I'm doing it for them. I'm preaching on marriage to help them. I'm preaching on grace to help them. I'm preaching on a relationship with the Holy Spirit to help them. So in the same way, I think I've worked through that when I preach on generosity and stewardship, I'm doing this for you. And they catch that. They get it. And I've even done the thing of just saying, listen, I promise you on the authority of God's word that you're going to see God's blessing and God's peace. There's going to be a contentment in your life when you get this area of your life straight. And then we have so many testimonies from people. So I think that's one of the reasons the results are so high. And I think they can be just as high to other churches as long as the pastors and the leaders will just simply pray through and say, you know what, we really do want people's lives to be better, and we're not going to listen to the critics, we're not going to listen to the enemy that says, hey, you're just doing this for a selfish reason, because we're not doing other things for a selfish reason. We're really doing this to help people. And I think as we do it to help people, then as Second Chronicles says, when the people brought the tithe, and King Hezekiah questioned Azariah, the chief priest, he said, man, what about the people? How are they doing? He said, oh, you're just seeing the tithe. You're seeing 10%. I mean, God has so blessed the people. When they began to put these principles into practice, God has blessed them. And I know that God will bless them financially, spiritually, emotionally, health, marriage, every part of their life when they get this area of their life according to the Bible.
It's a lot easier to talk about these things when you know what it's going to do for their life. Well, Pastor, talk to me a little bit about your car ministry that you guys have as well. You have a lot of cool things that you guys are doing at Gateway. I want to talk a little bit about the results. I want to inspire our listeners to what the results can be, because you talked about that wrestle on when you guys decide what you're going to give. And well, you said a word, we can. We're in a position where we can. And what's happening at Gateway from the outside looking in is you've got a lot of people that are in position to give. They're in a great position to do things. And so let's talk about the results for a minute. Tell me a little bit about this car ministry, because it's fascinating.
I think there were 90-something cars donated last year to our car ministry. If they're good working cars, then we'll take them to some mechanics in the church and tell us you know, do everything you can so that when we donate this to a single mom, the first thing she does is not have to have a set of tires or, you know, or a fan belt break or something. And so, and we supplement that with giving from the church. But then a lot of times some of the cars we sell, and then we put that back into the car ministry.
Well, Pastor, you're just an inspiration to us, great friends to the organization. Before I let you go, I want to ask you one more question. I want you to tease us a little bit about whatever you can tell us about your new book. It's coming out this month, Truly Free. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I'll try to do it real quickly, and that is just simply that I really believe that Jesus came to set us free. But as believers, so many times we get free from the penalty of sin through Jesus Christ as soon as we accept Him as Savior. But many times there are areas of a life where we're still under the power of sin, a sin that so easily besets us, a sin that we feel like, boy, if I could just overcome this, this would be the greatest joy of my life. And we just seem to fall so easily to that sin, and it's probably a different sin for us than it is for our spouse or for one of our friends or something. And so what I show in that book is that Christians truly, they really can be in bondage, and they need to know that. It's almost like once I become a Christian, then I can't be in bondage anymore, but we really can be in bondage. I show those areas and how, what gives the Satan that open door. You know, like if you went to church and you left your door open and a thief came in, he doesn't own your house, but he is in your house. And he's going to steal from you as long as he's in there. He needs to be arrested and taken out. And so I show that Christians can be in bondage, but the great news is we can be free. And so many times we've tried simply discipline to overcome these things, but we really do need deliverance as well. We need Jesus to set us free in an area. It's actually good news when you find out that you can be in bondage, because that means that you can be free. If you're held in bondage to something, there is someone who can set you free, and that's the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords.
Pastor, we know that your time is very, very valuable, and so on behalf of Chris and our entire audience, we want to thank you for spending time with us and sharing your wisdom, and also for modeling true stewardship for us. We really do appreciate you.
Well, thank you, Ken, and thanks, Chris, and please tell Dave that I said hi, and we love you guys, and we love how you help the local church. Thank you guys very much.
Awesome stuff from Pastor Robert Morris. I want to thank him for his time. I know you enjoyed that. And Chris, it's always fun. We sit back and we re-listen to this. So we have the conversation, we re-listen to it. And so I'm curious, you are a note taker. You're constantly applying stuff. What should we be looking for out of that conversation? Some takeaways maybe for our audience.
Yeah, that this is a discipleship thing rather than a money thing. A lot of times this topic, we put it into a bucket when we think about our org chart and we think of donor development, or we think about money and fundraising maybe even, and it needs to go under the discipleship bucket. This is a heart thing. And
oh, that's good.
A lot of times we're looking for a certain set of results, but we didn't do the discipleship to get the results. So nothing against fundraising. Sometimes fundraising is needed, but we shouldn't be fundraising to expedite the results of what it takes to actually develop people who will behave a different way. So, you know, we can't expect as leaders, we can't expect what we don't equip. And so a lot of times we, on the weekends, and this is what frustrated me through the years of ministry that I've been a part of, is you're casting vision like crazy on the platform, or maybe it's in a meeting, and you're getting head nods. Everyone's excited. Everyone's cheering you along. Shoot, they may even say amen. But then they're results, their engagement later, 3 days later, you find out nobody participated. And so you immediately want to quit. You want to hang it up. You want to let it, you know, I just give up. I'm not a good vision caster, or I don't have the ability. Maybe I'm hitting my leadership lid. But a lot of times people are not positioned for their intentions. They are intending to do things, but they just can't do it. They are not in a position to do it financially. And so I'm really passionate about this, about getting people in a position. We're seeing that. Did you know that at Gateway, they don't even take an offering?
Yeah, this is extraordinary, because I think people are going, what? Yeah. What's that look like in their church?
They just flat out, their service from beginning to end, there is not an offering time. And he doesn't talk about giving like in a financial sense, but once every 3 years. And their giving is almost twice as big as the next biggest church in America.
How are they receiving the funds? I have to ask this practically.
Oh, of course, yeah. Well, of course,
you have online,
to, when
of
you
course.
Don't do that, you have to be really smart and make sure that you got really good systems off the platform.
Right.
So they do this through small groups. Yeah. I want to say well over 70% people giving online.
Wow.
And they just got, everything's automated. I mean, it's just very good systems. Mm. So that's just remarkable.
Yeah, it is.
They don't even take an offering. And so if we can really cultivate people's hearts, we'll get the results. And again, the primary motive here is to build up an army of stewards, not to increase revenue, mm-hmm. not to increase resources. We shouldn't shy away from wanting a higher budget.
Sure.
We shouldn't shy away from that. We want to help more people. Yeah. So let's do it.
Yeah.
But
that's a result, of what we do in the heart and how we disciple.
Yes.
This is a key point you're making. We can preach it and we have to preach it.
Yeah.
But it is not enough just to preach it. We have to train them. Like when we go to the doctor and the doctor says, listen, your cholesterol's too high. You got to drop 20 pounds. You got to start working out. That's what the preacher's doing. But
exactly.
Then we got to get them with a trainer. We got to get a plan. That's what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can't just tell people to give. You got to teach them how. Mm. And so, you know, a lot of times we are asking for the results, but we got to change the belief system first. The belief system will change the actions, and the actions will bring it more out different outcomes.
And this came up in the conversation.
Yeah.
You are personal friends with Gunner, who is the stewardship pastor and has a staff.
Yeah.
And we talked about this in the conversation, and we want to say this out loud. And, and you've told me this a million times. Can we realize that not everyone can have a full-time staff pastor to lead stewardship, but it is doable through other means, and that's one of the entire reasons for what you are doing with our church team and stewardshipcentral.org. Mm-hmm. Talk about that, because we want people to know right now, hold your hand up.
Yep.
If you need some help, we're here to help you. How do we do that?
Yeah, we are currently helping churches from all different economic conditions. So it might be in a really affluent area, it might be in a financially distressed area, all over the country, different denominations, and we're helping them. Some of them are church plants. They don't have any money. And some of them, their churches of 50, 60,000 and everything in between. There's 300,000 plus churches in America, and they're all in different stages of development. We have a stewardship advisor that is assigned to every church in America that are there just to help, not to sell, to help and to serve. We don't really care what kind of resources you provide for your church. We know that ours are awesome.
That's right.
And we don't shy away from that. Great results. But man, just do something. Cultivate that heart. Disciple that heart. And then we've got these momentum trainings for pastors all over the country, 8 times a year. We train pastors on stewardship. Whether you have a paid stewardship guy or gal, or you have an unpaid, it doesn't matter. Just somebody who is gifted and anointed and called to that specific ministry.
Well, that is a great way for you to just get started. And as Chris says, we're here for you. We got real people that you can talk to who understand where you're at and are totally equipped to help you. So there it is. The website, very simple to get the whole process started. You can communicate with us multiple ways. All the information, stewardshipcentral.org. That's stewardshipcentral.org. I would also say that you should consider following Chris Brown on Twitter, because the guy is engaging. He's on the phone as much as his schedule will allow with pastors, discipling them, helping them. And a great way to communicate with Chris and to find out what's happening is on Twitter. And I love the Twitter handle, @TrueStewardship. So please engage with Chris there. He is answering his own tweets and tweeting his own stuff. And so you'll really enjoy that. That is an additional resource that we want you to engage with. Hey, I got to mention this real quick. Robert Moore's got a new book coming out that we think is just dovetails beautifully into this entire conversation and really the entire reason that we exist on this podcast and through the stewardship efforts here at Ramsey Solutions. The new book is entitled Truly Free: Breaking the Snares That So Easily Entangled. And basically, it is just a total book dedicated to reminding us what keeps us from being truly free. That's money. That's all across the board. And Chris, that is a wonderful feeling. As leaders, when we can help our people, the people that we are entrusted to lead and to disciple to be free, it's a game changer.
Number one frustration for a pastor is seeing people come up and they want to experience something new in life. They want to experience the next level with God, but they are walking around in bondage. a bondage of some sort. That book right there is not just about money. It's about bondage in general. Just bondage of people are living in bondage, with relational bondage, just bad decision making, and that helps you through it.
Well, good stuff as always. Again, the book is truly free wherever books are sold. Go check it out. Chris, it's always fun to hang out in the studio with you. Yes. When you're not cavorting all around the country. So always fun to be with you. Hey, we want to thank you for listening. We want to thank Robert Morris for being with us. His time is valuable, and I know that you folks are better for it. As always, on behalf of our producer, Bob Borquez, Chris Brown, and the entire Ramsey Solutions team, thank you so much for listening. We'll talk with you again very soon.